This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Logan Coleman joins me live in studio. She has just started her junior year at Charlottesville High School, and she's just back from Africa, right? Kenya, right?
Kenya, yeah.
Kenya, okay. Now, this is your second time on this program. And when you were here before, we were talking about Darfur and your interest in the Sudan and the, do we know now it's a genocide that's going on in Darfur?
I mean, yes, it's been confirmed a genocide by many countries.
Yeah, just horrible, horrible tragedies still going on in Darfur. So we want to hear about your trip to Africa, and you've learned Swahili and just this amazing story of just your leadership to pick up and go over there. But before we do that, explain first when all of this got on your radar. When did you sort of just all of a sudden start thinking about Africa?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I think the thing is, it wasn't an all of a sudden type of issue. It's kind of been building since I was little. I mean, even when I was four, Brother Daryl and an African drum and dance troupe came to my Montessori, and I immediately went home and asked my dad if I could go to the class. Youngest and whitest member of the class, of course. Loved The Lion King. My dad took it to me on Broadway. I rewatched the movie millions of times. It's just all these random things kept pointing in this direction. So I guess it's a calling in the realist sort.
Yeah.
And when I was 13, I found out about Darfur and the genocide going on there. And I guess that just kind of heightened and intensified my interests. And they've just kept building ever since, just even beyond culture, political stuff, internal affairs, all of that.
Logan, remind us, because folks have heard of Darfur, and they know people are being killed, but fill us in. What exactly, where is it, where are we talking about, and what exactly is happening, and why should we care as Americans?
Okay. Darfur is a region in western Sudan that's primarily made up of the African tribes, the Fur, the Masalit, and the Zagawa. And the Sudanese government, which is primarily Arab-run, has been mercilessly killing, raping, pillaging their homes, primarily for their race, it's been argued, but because they have rebel groups that come there. The main one is the Sudanese Liberation Army that just want to advance the Sudanese technology and create more equality for Darfuri citizens. And so you have a lot of citizens that are just caught in the crossfire between this government-run militia called the Janjaweed and... it's a genocide in its truest form.
And doesn't it have something to do with the Chinese? Aren't the Chinese bankrolling somebody over there to try
to
get some oil?
What's been happening with the Chinese is the Chinese are actually supplying the Sudanese government with their weapons, and Sudan is supplying the Chinese with oil. And that's been one of the biggest things internationally, is we all feel we need to pressure China to withdraw some of these to make a point to Sudan that they can't keep going on like this.
Yeah. And how many people have died at this point? Just innocent civilians?
It's approaching 600,000.
Oh, my God.
2.5 to 3 million lives have just been completely displaced. They're living with nothing in refugee camps in eastern Chad.
Oh my gosh. So what has been the reaction here in America? Because I know there's a lot of people, especially young people, who are aware of this and like yourself have literally taken to the streets to try to raise awareness for this. And you interned with an organization, right? That was Muhammad Yahya, who's been on this program, who lives here, was trying to raise awareness as well.
Right. I would say in America, the reactions have been honestly really mixed. There's a lot of people that care a lot about it. A lot of really good coalitions have been started. Save Darfur Organization, Stand, Mr. Muhammad Yahya's Demanga Coalition for Freedom and Democracy. But there's a lot going on in America, too. I mean, I know personally that a lot of people are concerned with the economy, of course, health reform. There's just so much stuff going on that I think it slips past people's minds a little bit. It's halfway across the world. But honestly, it's the issue of genocide. We talk about the Holocaust over and over again, and I think people need to realize it's just as serious.
Yeah, and it's going on as we speak. I mean, people are dying as we speak.
It's been going on. It's been going on since 2003. It's a more pressing issue in my mind because of the length, because of the deaths.
We're talking with Logan Coleman. She is a junior at Charlottesville High School. And your interest in Kenya, which began as a child now, as a teenager, you recently went to live in Kenya. Is that right?
Yep, Kenya, East Africa.
Now, tell me about that. How did you even start? When do you start to say, hey, I'm going to Africa? I'm not just interested. I'm going.
Well, of course, it's always been a dream to go. Last year, I decided to start taking Swahili because it's basically one of the only written down African languages that's used as the trade language, so I thought it would be most useful in my future. And Kenya is one of the East African countries which speaks Swahili, so I kind of zeroed in on Kenya a little bit for that reason. But I started doing some research. It was last summer. I've actually took a year to plan that I decided I really wanted to go. I didn't want to wait any longer. So went on the internet for months and months looking for things. I looked into programs, was a little cautious about the prices, and I would have to go with the under 18 programs. A lot of that was just touring and stuff like that. And so I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do at first, but I started finding out more and more about this tribe called the Maasai, which lives on the border of Tanzania and Kenya. And what was so interesting to me about the Maasai is the way they keep their culture in the rapidly modernizing world around them. And that kind of started a whole link of interest, like in Africa. Just how do these tribes and rural groups deal with the pressures of modernization? Do they want to modernize? What's the government asking them to do? Do they follow the same things as the more urbanized social groups in the area? So,
it's amazing to me that a 15 or 16 year old child here in Charlottesville would be captivated by these questions that, you know, journalists and anthropologists are spending their careers trying to answer, going back and forth. So you're fascinated by these people. When did you go, and how did you get over there? How did it happen?
I went for the whole month of July, and what happened was, okay, so there was some programs that would have little like descriptions of the program and say, go and visit a Maasai tribe for 3 days. But I didn't just want to visit a Maasai tribe. So I sent some emails to the heads of the program saying, could I have your contacts to the Maasai? Like, how'd you do this? I gave them like a little bit of my story. I don't have all the money in the world to spend on the program, but I appreciate them. And so they sent me back some really good contacts, one of which was a woman in D.C. named Barbara Shaw, who runs the Maasai Girls Education Fund. And she herself has been to Kenya many times and raises money for the girls there to get an education, which is really rare for most women in the Maasai community. And it's just, I guess, since the 90s has been starting to occur. A lot of it due to her, probably. Just because the Maasai communities are so far removed from the boarding schools that the men would have to pay for the women to go, and they usually only pay, if even for the boys, to go.
Yeah.
So I sent her an email, and I went up and met with her in D.C. in February and sat down with her and my mom and told her I wanted to go. And one of the first things she told me, she's like, well, I can help you get there, but I can't at all be held responsible for this. She's like, I am not going to be in charge of you. I can't be held responsible if anything happens there. So that obviously worried my mom a little bit. And
yeah, understandably so.
Understandably so.
Yeah.
But she agreed to
sending her teenage daughter to Kenya, and you're essentially on your own.
Yeah. I ended up going by myself. We send a lot of emails. So one of her representatives in Nairobi, which is the capital of Kenya, and who was a former Maasai, and I said, I asked her to look into if there was any families that would just be willing to host me, just as a guest, to be with the culture. And I eventually got led to the Ole Lamanyi family. And I was communicating with them through their brother. His name is Dan Sapis Ole Lamanyi, who has sort of westernized himself, is mainly living in Nairobi these days, doing a lot of church work. But he comes from a family of, I don't even know the number, because every day I was finding out about a new stepbrother or stepsister that didn't live there. But I was living with a group of 14 once I arrived in Kenya, in a place called Ngurumani, which is in the Kajiado district. And that's towards the border of Tanzania in the East African Rift Valley, which was really exciting, just thinking about the discovering of Lucy and just how close to the beginning
it's where we
of
all
Earth.
Started. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's it like? I mean, is it like a cinder block house or a mud house, or just what do I picture here?
Well, the first wife, who was my mom, Mama Nyambura was her name, she got the money, I guess, through selling a cow, which was really sweet of her, to construct me a hut that I shared with her one daughter, the one person there that spoke some English, Esther Sanayan. And it's called a manyata, and it's made of cow manure and mud, sticks, and grass. And you don't really pay that much attention to the top of it because it's never going to rain, so there's just some grass. But let me tell you, for an insomniac to sleep that well in Kenya, I was shocked. I slept so well. And no, it does not smell at all. It's completely dried. The climate's so dry.
Let me ask you this. What is it you think that most Americans don't know that you learned when you were there, that you would want us to know about life in Africa?
Okay. That's an interesting question. I guess one of the things I gathered going in with, like, the questions I had in my head about modernization, just about, like, these rural communities, was do they want to modernize? And I think a lot of people wonder that. They don't really think about it. But a lot of things they were really interested in. They loved my iPod, of course. The camera was a huge hit. I let the kids have the camera most of the time. And I brought a voice recorder. So things like that were really cool. But a lot of the kids, just in terms of like further jobs and stuff, they have been growing up, like for centuries, have been doing farming. It's the way of life. They don't want change in a lot of ways that I think we Westerners just assume people want change. They want these office jobs. They love the cows. They love herding and they love the earth around them and are really happy where they are.
That's an important point because I think you're exactly right. Americans are very quick to assume that you're going to want our way of life. That you want two cars in a garage and a garage. And, you know, you want the big house. And you want your Disney and your Domino's and your Coca-Cola. And that the rest of the world just needs to wake up to that fact. Because, of course, they want that. But you lived in a part of the world that in many ways is like going back in time where they're very happy with their cows.
They are. They're happy with their cows. They're happy with their occupations. But there are other things that they would like. They would like a cell phone. Just fun things like that. But not the things that really commit you to a whole separate way of life.
Yeah.
And I guess another thing I learned was, this was just funny to me. There's a lot of pictures I've seen of Africa that I think most Americans probably see. Just like starving children. And where I was living is considered third world. But they have no problem eating. I mean, they grow their own vegetables. It's completely self-sufficient. We're in a mountainous region. There's plentiful amounts of maize every day. They have their goats, which are like constantly popping out babies. And so the warriors will sometimes slaughter the goat. And yeah, there's some pictures I've seen where also like you see your typical African child and we need help and all that and they'll be covered in dirt. Okay, it's impossible to not be covered in dirt when you're living in such a dusty region.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just things like that. Like I would be covered in dirt by the end of the day.
Charlottesville was covered in dirt at the turn of the 20th century when the dirts were made a road in the summer and it was hot. They were dusty.
It's dirt, but it's not dirty. Yeah. That's the thing.
That's
there's
a good point.
Dust, but
so are you going back?
Oh, I'm definitely going back. I'd like to go back next summer. I'd like to go back for 2 months, spend a month with my family in Ngurumani again, definitely, but also possibly visit another country, Uganda, somewhere else in East Africa, maybe.
Logan Coleman is a junior at Charlottesville High School with a growing interest that she's taking very seriously now about life in Africa. Join us again, won't you?
Yes,
give us
thank
an update.
You.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.